All right, starting here on the top of Mem Vav Amud Aleph, five lines down. We're discussing here about Eved Kenani, and we discussed yesterday that Eved Kenani has a partial conversion process. And that is because when an Eved Kenani comes in to be an Eved Kenani under the auspices of a Jewish owner, then he becomes partially converted. He's partially converted because now he's going to keep mitzvot ki isha. If he eventually is freed, which is not so simple, the Gemara in other places discusses the restriction against freeing an Eved Kenani and tells stories in the Gemara and Brachot as in other places about the freeing of slaves, maybe for a mitzvah or a mitzvah derabim to make a minyan. But once they're freed, then they become full-fledged Jews and the conversion process is completed. So over here we're talking about the transference of ownership from buying it or purchasing an Eved Kenani from a Kenani or from a non-Jew, and then into a Jewish possession, that he has to undergo mikveh. He has to go to the mikveh in that process, as well as get a milah, because of this process of conversion that has begun as he becomes an Eved Kenani. So we said over here yesterday that if he goes ahead and jumps the gun and says that when I go to the mikveh, that I didn't go to the mikveh to convert, I went to the mikveh to free myself, to be a Ben Chorin, that works. Because of the nature of the ownership of the non-Jew. The non-Jew's ownership in this Kenani is not a full-fledged ownership like property. It's ownership, the equivalent, like yesterday we said, of a Jew's ownership in an Eved Ivri, which is that you have the right or lien on the output of the individual. You have a right to what their production is, but you don't own them. But when you sell it to the Jew, that changes. The Jew has the ability to own like property in Eved Kenani, which we'll see in today's Gemara. And because of that, that transition from the non-Jew owning the Kenani, where he only has a lien, he can only sell to the Jew that same lien. That's all he can sell to him. Once the Jew then exercises his right in terms of ownership in the Eved Kenani, and then brings him through the quasi-conversion process, then he has an ownership in the goof of the Eved Kenani, and then he's treated like real property. So he has the same status as Karka, passed on through Yerusha as real property. Many places in Shas will find certain things that are true of real property. The Gemara will say either Eved is included because Eved is like Karka, or sometimes I have a specific miut to exclude Eved. But Eved then, Eved Kenani, this has only been Eved Kenani, is treated like Karka, like property or real property, and it's passed down in Yerusha. And it has a status different than owning an Eved Ivri or a non-Jew owning an Eved Kenani. Now, in that process, because there's only a lien there, he can get rid of that lien before he actually becomes an Eved Kenani. That's what we discussed yesterday. Through his shichrur, through freeing himself, he can break the lien. And by breaking the lien, he can actually acquire himself and then free himself from going under the ownership of the Jew. So in order to prevent that from happening, the Gemara is going to discuss today the methodologies from preventing him from doing that. But first, the Gemara is going to challenge this or discuss this question about can he gain his freedom by simply going to the mikveh.
The guy's kinyan is not really half mafia.
No, he has a kinyan. It's a kinyan, which is a equivalent, we'll call it the difference between ownership and a leasehold. He has a leasehold in the Eved Kenani, and he can sell you that right. That's what he's selling to you. He's selling you that right. Then, once you've purchased that right, you now have to convert, literally and figuratively, you have to convert the Eved Kenani into a fully owned Eved Kenani. You do that by the process of putting him in the mikveh and his milo. And then he converts into a full-fledged Eved Kenani, and then exerts or increases your ownership in the Eved Kenani. So that's what the Gemara said, that you're allowed to buy what the non-Jew had. He can sell you whatever rights he had. He had a lien, so he sold you that lien. That's the right that he had. Just like by an Eved Kenani, you have a lien in the Eved Kenani. You could technically sell those rights. So you can sell rights, but there you can't sell ownership of the actual Eved Kenani. And that's what's going on here. He jumped the gun and freed himself before the exertion of that ownership. Because he went through a partial conversion on becoming an Eved Kenani. He becomes Chayev and Mitzvot like an Isha. He went through Mila and Tevila. An Eved Kenani, remember, to bring a Korban Pesach, the milah of your Eved Kenani is ma'akev. You would bring a Korban Pesach. You have to give him a milah, you have to have tevilah to become the Eved Kenani. So he becomes a quasi-Jew in that process. Shichur is the final stage that allows him to become a full-fledged Jew. Right, because here, the assumption is that he will not be freed. and he will not become a full-fledged Jew. He will always remain an Eved Kenani. But as an Eved Kenani living in your house, he has to conduct himself in a certain manner. So we're imposing on him the rules of the house as an Eved Kenani. We're not saying that we want him as a convert, a full-fledged convert. We're not assuming he's going to be freed and become a full-fledged Jew. We assume he will permanently remain as an Eved Kenani. So it's not like a proselytizing type of conversion. It's a conversion which is, if he's going to be your Eved Kenani and live in your house, he's got to conduct himself in a certain manner. All right, so now, Meitiv Rav Chisda. Mase bebloria gioret, shekadmu avada v'tavlu lefaneha. Bloria gioret, she was converting, and she also had avadim with her. So in the process of converting, she was a non-Jew beforehand, and her avadim were non-Jews. When she converts, she then can now increase her ownership in the avadim, but the avadim also have to go through that same process. But what happened was that they went in front of her. They did it first, based on the girsa that we have in front of us, which is shekadmu avadav tavlu lefaneha. Right? We'll discuss the other girsa in a second. Uba maase lefnei chachamim, came for the chachamim, amru kanu atzman bnei chorim, that they were able to acquire themselves as bnei chorim because they went into the mikveh first. Since they went into the mikveh first, they can declare themselves as free men because the only thing she had on them was a lien. And since she wasn't Jewish yet, she hadn't exerted that type of ownership, which could have prevented that. But the Gemara says now is a diuk, which is lifaneh in lacharei lo. Only if they went first could they do this. But if they went after her, they wouldn't have been able to do this, which goes against what we said yesterday. Because here, if she converted first and was then a full-fledged Jew, Gemara seems to indicate that it wouldn't work then. They just couldn't go to the mikveh and free themselves. But that was the story yesterday. A Jew was buying from a non-Jew. And then the Eved, when he went into the mikveh, said, I'm going to be a Ben Chorin, and that freed him. Over here, we're not suggesting, we're suggesting only if it happened before she was Jewish, did it work. After she's Jewish, it would not work. All right, we'll discuss in a second how the Gemara resolved this, but you should know that there's another girsa in the Gemara, which is instead of Tavlu Lifana, which is a consecutive or sequential type of idea in time, it was Bifana instead of Lifana. Bifanea means that they did it in front of her. That might make the difference, according to some of the Rishonim that explained the Gersa's Bifanea, which means only if they do it in front of her does it get them freedom. Because the fact she's present there, and then they go to the mikveh and quote-unquote declare themselves free, then it's successful. But if she's not present, or if the owner is not present, they can't free themselves. In the absence of the owner, they can't free themselves because you need the owner to kind of acquiesce to the freedom. So how do they acquiesce? They acquiesce by being present. Even though they're not necessarily agreeing, but being present is enough to allow it to happen. But if they're not present, then it would not work. So that's the girsa of some of the Rishonim. Rashi's girsa is Lifaneha, and that's why we'll continue to explain the Gemara based on Rashi's girsa of Lifaneha. So Amar Rava, this is the answer. Lifaneha ben bistam ben mifurash. Before she converts, if they go into the mikveh, whether they say anything or don't say anything, they automatically gain their freedom. La'achareha, after she's already Jewish, then miforash, if they declare that they're getting their freedom through this going to the mikveh, then it works. In bistam, lo. But otherwise, it does not work. Amar of Avyo, lo shanu elo lokeach min oved kochavim. That's only true if you're buying the Eved Kenani from the Oved Kochavim. Aval Oved Kochavim gufei kani. But the Oved Kochavim himself, he acquires his goof. Dichtiv, because it says, "Bigam bibnei atoshavim agarim imachem mehem tignu." From those that live amongst you, you are able to purchase. Atem konim mehem, velohem konim mikem. You can purchase from them, but they can't purchase from you. Velohem konim zemizeh, and they aren't able to acquire from each other. So you have, once the Eved Kenani is under the dominion of his master, Jewish master, there is a kinyan, a goof at that point in time. And as we spoke before, there's real ownership in the gufa evid. Based on that, it's only when another non-Jew is selling it to a Jew where the rights or ownership that he's selling is a leasehold or a lien on the production, do you have this issue. But if you buy the Oved Kochavim directly, then it never goes through that stage of the lien. Because he's selling you himself. When he sells you himself, he's going to sell you whatever rights he has. The rights that he has in himself are the full rights of ownership. So that he can't sell to you. So as an aside, the Gemara discusses all the different permutations, which are, you can acquire full rights, ownership in the Eved Kenani, but a Kenani cannot acquire those rights in a Jew, and a Kenani cannot acquire those rights in another Kenani. It's only in that one unique circumstance of the Jew owning the Kenani that you have that ability. Interesting enough, slaves in America were treated like real property as well, but according to the Torah, you don't have that ability to own real slaves in that way, as real property. You own the lien and the output of those individuals. You didn't own the individuals themselves. And the non-Jews that own slaves in America, they only owned the lien in them. They did not own them as real property. All right, so now, Gemara says, V'lohegen konimi kem? What do you mean they can't buy from you? Lamai. What are you talking about? Ilem alamasi adav. If we're talking about the output, a lien on the output on the production of this individual, atu ovei kuchavim lo kanila Yisrael, lamasi adav. A non-Jew can't acquire a Jew to be an Eved in this manner. Vaktiv, the parsha at the end of Sefer Vayikra, where it discusses the downfall of this individual, Gemara claims, because of the Smichot HaParshio, because he was doing Schora with Perot Shviit. So therefore, things start to go bad for him. He has to sell his house, his land, his house, his property. Then eventually he sells himself into slavery. And not only does he sell himself to slavery to a Jew, he ends up selling himself out to a non-Jew. And that is described by the pasuk here, Olo Eker Mishpachat Ger, Vamamar Mishpachat Ger Ze Ohovei Kochavim. He sells himself to a non-Jew. So when he sells himself to a non-Jew, you see that an Ivri, a Jew, has the ability to sell himself to a non-Jew. But that's only on the level of Masei Yadav, his output, his Masei Yadav. El Alav Legufei. So it must be that the bright that we quoted before is talking about whether you can own, really own the real rights of this individual, like property rights in this individual. The Torah tells us, Atem koni mehem afilu gufei, that you have the ability to acquire property rights, full-fledged ownership in the slave. So again, that's the conclusion of the Gemara, which is that as far as Masei Yadav, anybody can own someone else for their Masei Yadav. That means that a Oved Kochavim can own another Oved Kochavim for Masei Yadav. An Oved Kochavim can own a Jew for his Masei Yadav. And a Jew can own another Jew for his Masei Yadav. That's an Eved Ivri. But the only exception to that rule is a Jew owning a Kenani, where the Eved Kenani can be owned as the full rights of property ownership. And that's the unique case here, which the Torah is speaking about, that you have the ability, Gam Bnei HaToshavim, Agarim Imachem, Hem Tiknu. They have a full rights in Kinyan in this individual. So because of that, if you buy directly the Kenani, he sells himself to you, then he's selling his ownership, which is his full rights in himself he's selling to you. There's no way he can get out of the process then and make himself a Ben Chorim during the conversion process. On the other hand, if you buy from another non-Jew the Kenani, you can only buy from him the rights that he owns in this non-Jew. He owns output rights, you can buy output rights. There, in the transition process, the slave can free himself if it's not done properly. All right, so Parich Rav Acha, Ema B'Kaspa U'Betvila. So let us say here that the way that you acquire the Eved is, the Shum Avdut, is that you buy him, and then you're Tovel him. So if that's the way that you acquire him, then during that process, if it requires both of those to bring in the ownership, then maybe again he can escape the problem of becoming an Eved Kenani. We said now that if you buy directly from a Goy, then you have this interim stage because of Tvila, which makes it that he can escape in the middle. But if you buy him directly, then you're not going to have that problem. So what Rav Acha says is, wait a minute, when you buy him directly, let's assume that the ownership is gained through Kaspo, through money, and through Tvila. If that's the case, then the same thing could happen here, which is that you pay him, and then he has to undergo the Tvila, and when he goes to the Tvila, he does it to free himself. And it can undermine the sale, in a sense, in the same manner, because you don't fully acquire him until after the Tvila is done. So that's what the Gemara says, Kasha. That is a good question. We don't have an answer to that. Amar Shmuel, V'tzarich l'takfo b'mayim. It says to push him into the water. How do you prevent this from happening? Your question, which is, you can have a collusion here between the former owner and the slave, and basically sell the guy to the Jew and then tell him, you know, hop in the mikveh, say I'm a ben chorin, you're out of here. How do you prevent that from happening? Shmuel says, tzarich l'takfo b'mayim. You have to force him into the water. I mean, you have to exert ownership over him when he's going into the mikveh. Now, according to most, Rashi explains it this way, Tzarech l'tukpo b'mayim has nothing to do with the tvila itself. It's a way to demonstrate ownership over him. So it's a way to maintain mastery over the slave while he's going to the mikveh, so he can't do this trick of Ben Chorin. Some suggest, but it's very difficult to understand it this way, that the tukpo b'mayim is the nature of the tvila. The tvila has to be done in this way, and it affects the tvila, not that that's showing mastery. Rashi's understanding is much easier and makes a lot more sense here, because basically through an action, you can override no matter what he says. He says, I went in there to Ben Chorin. You say, no, you didn't. I pushed you in, and that's why you're in there. Your action overrides any thoughts or any things that he says. Ki hai, de minyamin, avdei de Rav Ashi. Like the case of minyamin, the Eved Kenani of Rav Ashi, baulet vule. He had to go to the mikveh. He had went through this process where he wanted to put him in the mikveh the shame, Eved Kenani. Masre nihalayu l'ravina l'ravacha b'edrova. So he gave him over to two of his students, Ravina and Ravacha b'edrova. Amar lehu, he said to them, chazu d'minaychu kab'inan lei. He says, make sure that if you do this, it goes through properly, because if he gets out of this, I'm going to take the money from you. I'm going to make you guys pay for the fact that you lost him. So make sure you undo this tevila in a proper manner, by which we don't lose him, because otherwise you're going to be responsible for the loss here. So Ramolei arviso bitzavere. They put a collar around his neck. Arfule, they loosened it. Vitzamtumule, and then they tightened it. Arfule kiheche delo avichatzitza. They loosened it so that when he went in the mikveh, the water would get in there. It wouldn't be a problem. Chatzitza. Tzimtumule kiheche delo likdem. They tightened it up so that he couldn't jump the gun and say, V'leima lehu, l'shem ben chorin ani tovel. You know, I'm going to ben chorin. So they had a demonstration of ownership while he was in the mikveh. V'hadi d'dali rei shemi maya. That's because as soon as he lifted his head out of the water, anchulei zulta d'tina reishe. They put a bucket of cement on his head. Not poured the cement, but I made him do the work, carry the bucket. V'amrulei zil amte l'bei marach. Go take it back to your master's house. So what they did throughout the process was demonstrate ownership over this Eved Kenani through the entire process. So by doing that, they used this sort of leash or collar. Plus, as soon as he raised his head afterwards, they made him into an Eved. I mean, they gave him something to do that exerted mastery ownership over the Eved. So there was never a time where he could just say, oh yeah, I did it Leben Chorin, because throughout the process, they were demonstrating ownership over him. The solution to the problem is exactly this. The solution to the problem is that you prevent him from creating this mikveh or tevila l'shem ben chorin by demonstrating mastery or ownership over the Eved Kenani through the whole process. And by doing that, then he can't claim that he was a ben chorin, because you showed that the mikveh, in a sense, was done against his will. It was done because he's an Eved, not because he's trying to free himself. Amale Rav Papa the Rova. Chazimar Hani Debe Papi Bar Abo. Diabi Zuze Linche the Kargayu Umishab De Buhu. So this is a case. Rav Papa says to Rava, do you see these, the household of Papa Bar Abba? Papa Abba is a very wealthy Jew. That they are paying money to the government, and then they are taking these individuals as slaves. Kinafke Tsriche Gita de Cheruta alone. When they release them, do they need a get shichrur? So this is the question over here. The question is actually a broader question. They might even need, the real question is, do they need mikveh? Do they need everything like an Eved Kenani? The answer that they're talking about is a get shichrur, which will tell us the information, what you need for the whole process. Over here, these were individuals who, everybody had to pay a poll tax or a head tax to the government. If you could not pay the poll tax or the head tax to the government, then other people were given the right to pay on your behalf. But if they paid on your behalf, then they owned you. They got you. So the question was, here, these people are going in and paying for these individuals and then subjugating those individuals. And the question that Rav Papa is posing to Rava is, Rav Papa is a Talmud of Rava, he's posing to Rava is, what they're doing, is that create an Eved Kenani? And if it does create an Eved Kenani, then do they need to get shichur to get out of it? Now, if they're an Eved Kenani, they also need mikveh, they also need everything through the process. Or lo. That's the question here. Amrale ikush chive, had I passed away, lo amri luchua milta, you wouldn't have this misora that I have, which is chacha amar rabbi sheshet, mor kayu dahani betafsa de malko manoch. Says that the badge or the symbol of these individuals are under the dominion of the king. Basically, this is a strong endorsement of Dina de Malchuta Dina, which is that the king owns the individuals. Because basically the chutam. Chutam was a seal that slaves wore to demonstrate or to show that they were slaves. These individuals are basically slaves to the king. Everybody's a slave to the king. Unless you pay your money to free yourself. Since they couldn't pay it, the king's seal was on them. Umalka Amar. And the king says, Mandaloyiv Karga, Mishtabid Mandaloyiv Karga. Whoever pays the poll tax, the head tax, for someone else, then they get dominion over that. So basically, the king owns them as slaves, because he has his chotam on them, and he can determine then whoever gets the slave afterwards. He can sell the slave to anyone else. When you pay the head tax, you get him as a slave. So he says that's not a problem at all. And this is no issue whatsoever, and they are able to buy them and gain them as slaves, even though they're being bought through money, not going to them, but going to the king. But he's saying that the king owns them. And therefore, you do own them as a slave.
Kind of ownership.
It would be a leasehold until he converts them, and then it would make him into full Eved Kenani. Your question is a fair question here, because there are actually three dayot in the Rishonim as to what happens over here. Some suggest, like Rashi, who suggests over here that we're talking about Kenanim. And the question is, do they become an Eved Kenani over here? That was the question at hand. Can you do this? That was one question. The other possibility is that they're not asking about non-Jews, but rather about Jews. This was talking about Jews who weren't paying the head tax, and they were buying or paying off the Jews' head tax. Does it work? The Ritva goes as far as to say here that it was a din in Eved Ivri. It was a question, can they create this person into an Eved Ivri? Because, as you know, Eved Ivri went out with the Ovel, and they weren't practicing any Eved Ivri. It doesn't exist at that time. So here, Rava was saying back to them, based on Rav Sheshit was, yes, that because of Dina de Malchuta Dina, you can simulate creating an Eved Ivri, even though the classification or the din of Eved Ivri doesn't exist anymore because of the Ovel, but because of the way the king conducts himself, you can create an Eved Ivri. And so therefore, according to those Rishonim, we're talking about Jews here that are being bought out, not non-Jews. Right, so then you have to talk about why there's a get shichror. That might have to do with the ability to free the Eved Ivri. Maybe it doesn't mean literally a get shichror, but just do you have to free them? Are they then subjugated to these individuals and they don't have the right to walk away? Are they just a poel or are they an Eved Ivri and they're stuck there? So that might be the question that's being asked over here. The last opinion is that we're talking about a ger toshav here, not a Kenani, not a Jew, and the question is, does this subjugation work through the Malchut? In addition to that, if you believe that the people that were not paying their taxes and then the Jews were taking over and paying their taxes for them were non-Jews over here, why is this different than the case we had in the beginning of the Gemara? That was your question, where it's a non-Jew selling it to a Jew. A non-Jew only has output rights, a lien on the individual. They don't have ownership over the individual so that when they pass it to you, that you would have that same type of full ownership in the individual. What you see from here is that the Gemara believes that the Malchut, the din of a king, is different than the din of a regular non-Jew. By a regular non-Jew, we assume that their ownership in another non-Jew is simply a lien on their output rights, but nothing more than that. Whereas when it comes to the king actually has ownership rights in these individuals, and that's what he's passing to the Jew who's paying the poll tax instead of them. And that might have nafka mina d'halacha when you have people that are taken against their will by a non-Jew. What is the relationship between the individual who is subjugating and the individual who is taken into captivity? Because here we see with a king or a ruler that they might have a stronger hold on the individual than your typical relationship between two non-Jews. So those are the different opinions here. Again, we explained it like Rashi, which we're talking about non-Jews, and it's easier to explain it that way, because then the get shichrur and everything being explained here makes a lot more sense, falls into place a lot easier. Reb Chiya Ba'aba, Iklo Legavlo, Chaza Benot Yisrael, Dem Abran Migerim, Shemalu, Velo Tavlu. So Bechir Ba'ava went to this city, and he saw that the Jewish girls were becoming impregnated, but basically marrying these non-Jews that had converted, but their conversion was malul velo tavlu. They had mila, but no tevila. V'chaza chamro de Yisrael, de mazgei ovdei kochavim. He saw Jewish wine being poured by non-Jews. V'shatu Yisrael, and then Jews drank it. V'chaza tumusin, de shalkei ovdei kochavim. And they saw these lupines that were being cooked by non-Jews. V'achle Yisrael, and the Jews reading them. V'lo amar lehu, v'lo midei. He didn't say anything to them. Now the problem here, there's a problem in each one of these stages. One is malo velo tavlo. Milo without vila is not considered to be a full-fledged conversion. So you have a serious problem over there. Second problem is stam yenam, which is they're pouring wine for Jews. You have a problem of stam yenam. How are the Jews drinking the wine afterwards? In case of cooking the turmusim, you have a problem of bishul akum. How come that was going on? So obviously there was a problem in this place. And now he's going to do it. After the kamei de Rabbi Yochanan, so he came before Rabbi Yochanan and reported what he saw. Go ahead and announce that their children are mamzerim. This is Rabbi Yochanan lishitate, because, remember, the Gemara will say it again later, but the Rabbi Yochanan says that an eved and obi kochavim in Bat Yisrael produces a mamzer. So he thinks they're not Jews because the conversion didn't go through, and so therefore it produces a mamzer. Their wine is classified as yayin nesech. Lefi she'enam b'nei Torah. Because they're not b'nei Torah. Now, what does it mean they aren't b'nei Torah? How does that impact over here to make it that they're not b'nei Torah? What does that have to do with being b'nei Torah? Their activities were problematic, period. So we have to understand what that modification is at the end. Al b'neihem she'emim mamzerim. Their children are mamzerim. Rabbi Yochanan the Tamei. This is Rabbi Yochanan the Shitato. Dam Rabbi Chia ba'avam Rabbi Yochanan olam. In ger ad shimol v'itbol. You're not a full-fledged ger until you get a mila and go to the mikveh. Became into Otavil, Ovi Kochavim Ho. Since he didn't go to the mikveh, he's still not Jewish. V'amar Rabba Barchana Rabbi Yochanan, Ovi Kochavim, the Eved Abal Bat Yisrael of Vlad Mamzer. Here, so now, if they are now together with these men who are Ovi Kochavim, the children born of that wedlock are considered to be Mamzerim, according to Rabbi Yochanan. This is Rabbi Yochanan the Shitate in both aspects, which is number one, Mila without Vila is not a ger, he's still an Ovi Kochavim. And number two is it's an Ovi Kochavim and a Jewish woman, the child produced is a mamzer. Vayena mishum yai nesech, mishum leich leich amina nizira schor schor the karma lo tikrav. So this is a principle the Gemara talks about in other places, which is a nazir is not allowed to eat grapes, he's not allowed to drink wine, he's not allowed to have any grape products. So when we talk to the nazir, what do we tell the nazir to do? Don't enter into the vineyard, because if you enter into the vineyard, you're going to get yourself into trouble. So take precautions and walk around the vineyard. So this is an expression the Gemara uses when it talks about precautionary measures, things that are not mi'ikar adin, but precautionary measures. So he called their yayin yayin nesech because it wasn't really yayin nesech, but rather it was something that was either stam yenam or something distant. Rashi describes here that the problem was that they never touched the wine. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says they have to do kishkush, which is an unclear term in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, but kishkushe is the thing, like they move their fingers a little bit, that's what creates the libation of the yayin nesech. So over here, Rashi says they were pouring it out of the barrel, out of the bottle, and they never touched the wine. So Rashi says that's only koach. It's not direct contact with the wine, it's only koach. And in that case, it would not be classified as yayin nesech. And so here, it was just a harchoka. Because they were pouring it already, he says that let's classify it as yayin nesech, even though it wasn't really yayin nesech. That's how some explained it over here. Others say even bekoach, if you're pouring the wine, that still would create a problem, either yayin nesech or stam yeinam. So what's the problem over here? It was mozgim. It says they were mozeg. Mozeg means that they're mixing water with the wine. That's how you're mozeg. You dilute the wine. So it says what they were doing was they were diluting. They weren't pouring the wine. They were pouring the water into the wine. And the question was, the dilution of the wine, does that create a problem of stam yenam? So he says, truthfully, no. But over here, we're going to do our chukka because these people are not b'nei Torah. And we can't let them. If we let them do this, they're just going to let anything go through. The residents of Gavla are obviously not b'nei Torah. And this is what's causing the problem. So he's saying, even though maybe under the letter of the law, this is not problematic, But because they can't differentiate, they don't understand the halacha, we've got to make this asur so they don't actually breach the letter of the law. Again, here it's modified b'einim b'nei Torah. Ha b'nei Torah shari. Had they been b'nei Torah, it would have been mutar. Why isn't it b'shul akum? Anything that can be eaten raw doesn't have a din of bishulakum. So if you eat vegetables raw, if the vegetables are cooked, then they don't have a din of bishulakum. The lupines are too hard to eat when they're raw. You can only eat them once they are cooked. Therefore, it would have a problem bishulakum. Rabbi Yochanan ki'idach lishna svirle. There are two lishonot in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah as to what generates bishul akum. The other one is the Amar of Shmuel bar Yitzchak mishmei derav kol she'in ola al shulchan melachim lechol bo atapat. Anything that would not be served on a king's table to accompany the bread in bo mishum bishule avdei kochavim. It has to be something significant enough that it would be served. Like today, we would use the president's table. If they would serve it at the president's table, then that's enough to consider it or classify it as Bishul Akum. Now, the way the halacha works, and the Tosafot discuss it over here, is that we're mekil like both shitot. That means that either, if it is nechal kamot yuchai, if it's eaten raw, it doesn't matter if it's ola al shulchan melachim, it's still not bishul akum. And the other way around, if it's ola al shulchan, if it's not ola al shulchan melachim, even if it's not eaten raw, then it doesn't have a din of bishul akum. So we actually paskin like the shnei akulot. The reason is because the problem here is not the bishul of the akum per se. The cooking of the akum is not what caused the problem. It's not a chetzav isur that they create. The din of bishul akum was instituted in order to create separation, in order that we don't become too close with them. So because that was the need or the din here, therefore it only dealt with where the bishul akum is doing something that would create a certain amount of closeness. If you would eat it raw and he cooks it, what's the big deal? You could have eaten it anyway. He didn't do anything that generated a meal or serving you a meal to bring closeness. Same thing, if it's not ola shulchan melachim, then it's not something that's significant that he's doing. If it's not significant, then it's also not going to create kirvat alev. And so the point here, or the reason for the isur, is to prevent having, basically breaking bread together. And so therefore it has to be something of significance that he's doing that would be a sort of kirvat alev by doing it. It's only because they were not b'nei Torah. Had they been b'nei Torah, he would have said it's not a problem of bishul akum because it wasn't ola al shulchan melachim. So that's fine. So it's not really bishul akum, but he said for them it's going to be bishul akum because otherwise they're just going to be mekil. They don't know how to differentiate because they're not b'nei Torah. Now, Tana Rabbanan, this brings us into the sugya of mila, tvila, and how a ger converts. Right, this has major ramifications in terms of the process of gerut, which is Tana Rabbanan, ger shemal velo taval. A ger that has a mila, had a brit mila velo taval, but never went to the mikveh. In that case, Rabbi Elazar Omer, harizeh ger. Rabbi Elazar says, that's a full-fledged ger. Shekei matzinu babotenu, shemalu velo tavlu. Our forefathers got mila without going to the mikveh. Taval velo mal. On the other hand, if he went for a tvila and didn't get a mila, Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Rabbi Zegir, Yeshua says that's a good conversion. So Rabbi Eliezer says that mila is the key element here. And if you have mila, even without tvila, the gerut goes through. Rabbi Yeshua seems to say the other way around, which is tvila is the main element. And therefore, if you have tvila without mila, then it goes through. Shekein matzinu b'imahot, shetavlu velo malu. We see by them that they had tvila without mila. Now both, right, so both of these, where we see our avot, had mila without tvila. So what most of the Rishonim say over here, is this is talking about the Yotzei Mitzrayim, prior to Har Sinai, because anybody who was from Yotzei Mitzrayim had to get a mila to bring the Korban HaPesach, to do the Korban HaPesach. So what the Rishonim explain is that the Gemara sees that mila as being the process of conversion for those Jews in Mitzrayim to become full-fledged Jews as they approached Har Sinai. And so therefore you had mila, and Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot, that was associated with the Har Sinai. So this Mila was done as process, in the process of conversion, to bring the Korban HaPesach. So that's what they say, that Avotenu Malu Velo Tavlo. Imahot is a much harder condition, which is, who are the Imahot? So some suggest, if you're talking about the Dor HaMidbar, like by the Avot, you have to say the same thing by the Imahot, that you're talking about the women of that generation. So the women of that generation, tavlu v'lo malu, they went to the mikveh and didn't have milah. We have no evidence of the fact that they went to a mikveh, so that we'll have to discuss in a couple minutes how that happened, but it's still not clear. There are some that suggest that the word imahot over here means literally our mothers, like the imahot, the four imahot, right. And that refers to, you know, Sarah Rivka Rachel v'leya, and has to do with the same thing, that the men in the family, when Avram got the tzivoy of milah, so he converted or he became a Jew through the Milah. They had a covenant or brit with Hashem. How did the women have that? Tavlu. Again, there's an assumption that they went to the mikveh. Either way, you're making an assumption for something that's not explicitly documented in the Torah that the women had mikveh without Milah. But Chachamim omrim, and Chachamim believe, Taval velo mal, mal velo taval, ein ger ad shimo bitbo. Pretty straightforward. The Chachamim's position, which is, you need both. You need Milah and Tavila without either one of them. You don't have a ger over here. Somewhere it says, Rabbi Yeshua nami nilef me'avot. Rabbi Eliezer nami nilef me'imahot. Why doesn't Rabbi Yeshua accept the proof of Rabbi Eliezer? And why does Rabbi Eliezer accept the proof of Rabbi Yeshua? V'chitani teima ein danim efshar mishi efshar. We're not done efshar. Something possible for something that's impossible. Over here, by the women, it's impossible for them to get a brit milah. So how could you learn from women to men? Because the reason they don't have a milah, it's because they can't have a milah. Does that prove you don't need a milah? Not necessarily. That's taking something that is from the impossible realm into the possible realm. Maybe that doesn't work. Vatanya, that's not true, because we see Rabbi Eliezer does use that type of logic, which is, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Minayin the Pesach Dorot, Shein Baala Min HaChulin. How do you know that Pesach today can't come from Maser Sheni? That you have to use Chulin money to buy it. Never Pesach b'Mitzrayim, v'never Pesach b'Dorot. There was a Pesach Mitzrayim, Pesach Dorot, they're hukash to each other. Ma Pesach Amor b'Mitzrayim by Elamina Chulin, just like the Pesach Mitzrayim only could come from Chulin money. How do you know it could only come from Chulin money? Because there was no Maaser Sheni. There was no Maaser Sheni at that time, so it had to come from Chulin money. Ah Pesach Amor l'Dorot, in Elamina Chulin. So you see there that you're taking some Efshar. By Pesach Mitzrayim, it's impossible to come from anything but Chulin, because there was not anything besides Chulin. So now you're proving from that the Pesach Dorot, even though there's a possibility of Maaser Sheni, you still can do it. So we see Rabbi Eliezer does subscribe to that logic. And in subscribing to that logic, that means that he could have used Rabbi Yeshua's proof from the Imahot. Amalei Rabbi Akiva, v'chi danim efshar mishi efshar. So you see, Rabbi Akiva is rejecting Rabbi Eliezer's logic that because it's efshar mi efshar. So Rabbi Eliezer clearly subscribes to that, so why doesn't he subscribe to Rabbi Yeshua's position? Amalei, afa pishi efshar raya gdolahi benilmad amena. He says, even though it's Efshar, it's still Raya Gdola. It's a great proof, and we're going to learn from it. That was Rabbi Lezer's response to him. Meaning that there's a certain logic that you can use over here, even though it's not foolproof, but in a sense, it can be used from something that's impossible. We can now see something that's true, even though it's possible. Ela, v'taval v'lomal, kule alma lo plige demahani. Everybody agrees that when you do tevila without milah, that it works. Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer agree because of the proof from Imahot. Ki plige, where's their argument? B'mal velo taval. When you have a milah without tevila. Rabbi Eliezer lo yolif me'avot. Rabbi Eliezer learns out from the avot, our forefathers, that they had milah without tevila. Rabbi Yeshua b'avot nami tevila havo. He says that there was also tevila by the door of Midbar. How do you know that? Menole. Where does he know that from? Where do you see tevila in the Torah? Ile midichti, because it says, by Mamad Har Sinai, in Parshat Yitro, in the introduction, in the phase of going to Har Sinai, it says there that they have to be mikadesh themselves and clean their clothing in order to approach Hashem at Har Sinai. Maba makom she'ein taun kibus, taun tvila. In a case by, for instance, Tumat Erev, Tumat Keri, where you have to go to the mikveh, your clothing doesn't have to be washed to go to the mikveh, you simply have to go to the mikveh. Makom shaton kibus. If they're washing their clothing, then certainly, you know, din shaton tvila, they certainly went to the mikveh, and that's what bikidashtam means. Kidashtam means go to the mikveh and get rid of tuma. Mar says, duma nikiyot ba'alma. Who says that? Maybe they're just cleaning themselves. You're going before Hashem, you want to come in your finest clothing, and you want to be clean. So maybe that was what it was. Clean your clothing, clean yourselves, and go. As Rashi says over here, you have to clean the clothes. You want to come with your white things to this type of thing. Right? The rayo that you have to wear a white shirt on Shabbat from this Gemara, because he says you want to approach Hashem, you want to come to Har Sinai. What's the proper way? You come in your levanim, you come in your whites. So now the Gemara says, Elami Hocha, comes from here. Vaykach Moshe et Adam, Vayizrok al Ha'am. Moshe took the dam. This is found at the end of Parshat Mishpatim in Perchav Dalet, There it describes a process of entering into a covenant between Bnei Yisrael and Hashem. And there they bring korbanot, and they have agonot adam. They have these receptacles with the blood in it. And it says there that, Vayikach Moshe et hadam v'yizroch kalam, he throws it on the people. He sprinkles dam on the people. V'gmiri. And we have a mesorah, dein hazah b'lo tvila. You can't do hazah without going to the mikveh. Hazah and mikveh come together in a package. If we know that the Torah says you got to sprinkle something on somebody, they got to go to the mikveh. Now here the Rabbeinu Tam discusses two times that you have to go to the mikveh beforehand. That's what the Gemara is discussing here. But then after hazah, you have to also go to the mikveh again. That's for tara. But there is a need to go to the mikveh prior to hazah. So therefore, if they sprinkle blood on the Bnei Yisrael in the midbar, then they certainly went to the mikveh. Because hazah and tefillah come hand in hand. So that's how he knows they went to the mikveh. V'Rabbi Yoshua tefillah b'imahot minolon. Where does he know that they had tefillah? Now, you could argue that they had hazat adam. So why don't you make the same argument here? It says, Vayikach Moshe et adam vayizrok alam. If he threw it on the people, he threw on the men and the women. So if there's hazah, there's tefillah. So why isn't that the answer? From here, most of the Rishonim conclude that the hazat adam was not done on the women. It was only done on the men. Otherwise, that would have been the answer. The answer would have been that they got hazah, they also need tefillah. The Gemara's answer is, svaruhu. It's just logical. Then what did they do? The women did nothing in the Kabbalat HaMitzvot by Har Sinai. What was their conversion process? If they didn't do tefillah, they didn't do hazah, and they didn't do brit milah, what did they do in order to convert? So it must be that they did tefillah, because they had to do something in order to convert, and therefore it must have been tefillah is what generated that transition for the women. So from here, Rabbi Yeshua concludes that by imahot, tefillah is necessary and was the way they converted. And because that was efshar, you can learn to efshar over here. And that means for men too. If you go tefillah by itself, that would be sufficient. It's not complete. You still have to do milah, but that would be enough to get you to be classified as a Jew when you go to the mikveh. On the other hand, when it comes to milah, if you only did milah without tefillah, Rabbi Eliezer says that works and you're Jewish. Rabbi Yeshua says it doesn't work because in the midbar, when they had milah, they also had tefillah. Milah doesn't go without tefillah, and therefore you would need both of them. So, Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan olam enu ger ad shimo bitbo. He says, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba says, there's no gerut until you do both of them. Where it says, pshita, what type of statement is this? Yechid v'rabim, halacha k'rabim. Says, wait a minute, we had the braita before, we brought the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, the opinion of Rabbi Yoshua, and then the chachamim. So you have the Rabbim arguing on Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. If that's the case, then obviously Halacha k'Rabbim, and you need both Milah and Tevilah. Man Chachamim. Who is the author of that position of the Chachamim? It's not really a plurality. It's rather Rabbi Yossi. It's a Yadat Yachid, the Tanya. Harei Shebav Amar Malti V'lo Tavalti. He comes before us and says, I had Milah in my conversion. I didn't go to the mikveh. But Bilanoto Mabekach. Divi Rabbi Yehuda. We stick him in the mikveh. And what's the difference now? That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ein Matbilin, you're not allowed to put him in the mikveh. So now, Lefikach, because of that, Matbilin ger b'Shabbat divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says you can put him a ger into the mikveh on Shabbat because that doesn't make a difference. In the end, if he has a milah, that was the real conversion. If he goes to the mikveh, he went or didn't go to the mikveh, it doesn't make a difference. So let him go to the mikveh now. What's the difference? Rabbi Yehuda says, B'chad asagyo. Either one of them is sufficient. So if he already has a milah, then going to the mikveh doesn't do anything. So then he can go on Shabbat, because it's not Metakin Gavra, and tell him to go to the mikveh now, and then he's done. You know, what's the big deal? On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi believes that you can't have milah without tevilah. You need both. You need milah and tevilah. If that's the case, you can't go to the mikveh on Shabbat, because that is a Metakin Gavra. That actually changes the status of the individual from being a non-Jew to a Jew. Since that changes his status, you can't do it on Shabbat, because that's Tikkun Gavro. In addition to that, we're not going to let him go to the mikveh now in order to become a ger, because you need both. You need milah and tefillah. So since you didn't do milah in front of us, then the milah is no good. And since the milah is no good, going to the mikveh won't do anything for you. So Rabbi Yehuda says, listen, if he comes and says he has a milah, so we don't know if it was a good milah or not a good milah. Just stick him in the mikveh. If he goes to the mikveh is enough. Taval v'lo mal, that gets you there. So he's done. In addition, if he has already done milah, on Shabbat he wants to go to the mikveh, no problem. Go to the mikveh because he's already converted with milah. That's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Rabbi Yossi says, no, you need both. Therefore he shows up and says, I have a milah. Putting him in the mikveh is not going to do anything because we're not sure that the milah was okay. So since we don't know if the Mila was okay, then we're not going to let him go to the mikveh and say he's converted. Number two is, if it comes to Shabbat and he has a Mila that was good, he can't go to the mikveh because it's going to complete the process. So here you have a Machloket Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, but you see that whose din is it that you need to require both Mila and Tmila? That's Rabbi Yossi. So now if we go back to the Braita, we have three opinions in the Braita. We have Rabbi Yoshua, who says that Taval Velo Mal works. We have Rabbi Elezer, who says Taval Velo Mal works, and Mal Velo Taval also works. Then we have Rabbi Yossi, who says that you need both. So along comes Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba and says, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi, who is called the Chachamim in that Braita, but Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi. The one thing you have to ask about the Tevila on Shabbat is that you're allowed to go to the mikveh on Shabbat to become Tahor, a Gavro, an individual. Gemara Beitza tells us that you can go to the mikveh on Shabbat, and if you're Tamei, become Tahor, it's not a problem. What about Tikkun Gavro? The Gemara says it's Nira Kameikar. It looks like he's going to cool himself off in the water. So then the Gemara says, what happens if it's a cold day? Maybe he's going in to clean himself. The Gemara goes through all these things. It's not obvious that he's doing a Tikkun Gavro. That's why it's allowed. How come we don't say the same thing here by Geirut? If he's going to the mikveh, just say he's going in there to cool. Who says he's doing Geirut? So the Rishonim answer in two ways. One is that over here you require a Beit Din. Over there, the guy can go to the mikveh. Nobody has to be around. So nobody knows about it. And it's Tikkun Gavro. It happens by itself. He becomes Tor. It looks like he's going to cool himself off. He becomes Tor. Over here, we have Beit Din overseeing him going to the mikveh. You can't claim he's going to cool off when you have the Beit Din standing over him. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is that it's a different type of tikkun. Tuma tatara, that's a small tikkun. Okay, so there that goes there. Non-Jew to Jew, that's just too substantial a tikkun. Therefore, we're not going to let it go through. The Rambam in the end says that the problem here is that it's mishpat. We're going to learn later on at the end of today's daf that conversion is called mishpat, which means that it's a din. And you're not allowed to do din on Shabbat. So that's why you can't do it on Shabbat. So all those reasons, we don't allow him to go to the mikveh on Shabbat, the way we paskin, like Rabbi Yossi Shita. Amar Mar, lefikach mapilin ger b'Shabbat. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you can put him into the mikveh on Shabbat, because it doesn't do anything. Mar says, Shita, kevin d'am Rabbi Yehuda b'chad asagyo. Since Rabbi Yehuda says that you need either one, mal or tvila, similar to Rabbi Elezer's position, hecha d'mal lefaneinu matbilin. If he had mila in front of us, let him go to the mikveh on Shabbat. My lefikach. Why is it therefore? Of course therefore. Because the mikveh is not doing anything. It says, Ma'adu teimel Rabbi Yehuda tvila ikar vitzvila v'shabbat lo dekametakin gavra. Look, Rabbi Yehuda agrees that you can become converted either way. Mila or tvila works. But he prefers tvila. Tvila is the main part of the conversion. So therefore, on Shabbat, we would say don't go to the mikveh. Even though you have mila already, don't go to the mikveh because the mikveh is the key component. So therefore, we say kamash v'lan. The Rabbi Yehuda, oha, oha. No, the Rabbi Yehuda believes it's equal. Mila or Tvila, either one's equal. Therefore, if he did Mila, going to the mikveh is not Mala or Morit, and you can go to the mikveh. By Rabbi Yossi, Omer, in Matbilin. Rabbi Yossi says you can't go to the mikveh on Shabbat. Again, Pshita. Kevin Darmer Rabbi Yossi, Tarte Beinon. Since Rabbi Yossi requires both Mila and Tvila, Tikkuni Gavra b'Shabbat, lo mitkaninan. We don't allow you to do a Tikkun Gavra on Shabbat. So, Ma'udat Tevil Rabbi Yossi, Mila Ikar. The main thing is the Mila. It's just over there in the case that we were talking about. The Mila wasn't done in front of us. But had the Mila been done in front of us, he would say, we would say, okay, the Mila is the main thing. The mikvah is necessary, but it's not the mainstay. So in the case that he brought before us was a case where he had Mila not in front of us, and we're not sure about the Mila, then we're not going to let him go to the mikveh because we're not sure that he really had a proper Mila. But on the other hand, if we know that he has a proper milo, maybe we'll let him go to the mikvah on Shabbat. Kamash Manda, that's not the case. Rabbi Yossi Tarte Bai. He needs both of them. They both stand at the same level, which is Mila and Tvila on the same level, and you require both of them in order to convert. Right? This actually brings up something that is Minyona Dioma about Mila Shalom B'Faneinu, which is now, it's going around, there's an organization that goes around and makes sure that Jews get Brit Mila. And they just discovered that a large number of Persian Jews that came from the city of Shiraz did not have proper Mila. They only had Atafa Dambrit, and they did not have the Hasarata Orla that was done to them, and whoever performing the Brit Mila there were not... Yeah. These are when they were living in Iran at the time, they didn't have Brit Mila done properly. So now, all of a sudden, they discover this. This is Mila Shelo B'Faneinu. It was a Mila that wasn't done in front of us. Generally, we accept that there's a chazaka, that if the mila was done with somebody proper, and a person has a mila, that it was done properly. But over here, they're discovering that their orla is still there. And so they know for sure, in a sense, that the Mila wasn't done. So now they're having, these men are undergoing Mila in order to remove the Orla and to have a proper Mila, because otherwise it's a Chiyuv Karet. The person passes away without a Brit Mila, there's a Chiyuv Karet associated with it. So yesterday or 2 days ago in the news, there was a 92-year-old man from Shiraz that had his Brit Mila done, and they had a big Sudat Brit Mila afterwards, but this is Mila Shel Al Lefaneinu. He was had a Mila done, and Baruch Hashem, now he has Mila Kehil Chata. So he was very close, right? Very close to Avraham Avinu. Although they did it with local anesthetic. Alright. Second thing is, there is a question amongst the Rishonim, and it has interesting factors here, is what happens in this process of Mal Velo Tabal. In the case he does Mila and doesn't get Tvila, but we say he's not a full-fledged Jew, does that mean he's nothing and he's no Vid Kochavim? Right, that was kind of what Rabbi Yochanan was suggesting, that if you're missing something, they're a full-fledged Ovid Kochavim. Or do we say that they're a partial Jew? That they've made it through some of the process, they just haven't finished the process. Now, why does that matter? Because it comes up in a question, I think this is in the Shuta Radbaz, and a related question in the Tashbetz. The actual case is brought down by the Machazei Avram and the Yimre Yosher about a question that was asked to them from the Tishbiner Rebbe, and is also mentioned by the Tzitz Eliezer. They had an amazing story like this. Incredible, incredible story. And the Pesach Halacha came up, and then everybody discusses it based on this story. Which is, there's a din in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says that, Nachri akum sheshabat chayav mita. A non-Jew who keeps Shabbat is chayav mita. So anybody who's non-Jewish can't keep Shabbat. So now, if you have Mila without Tvila, what is the status of this individual? Are they still considered an akum? And therefore, if they keep Shabbat, they'd be chayav mita. And therefore, they have to violate Shabbat. They have to do something to violate Shabbat. Or are they already not an akum? They're already Jewish enough that they can keep Shabbat and would not be a violation of the din of Nachri Shabbat is chayav mita. Now, why does that matter? Okay, that's like a little din. What happened was, there was this ger who was converting, a ger tzedek was converting, I think it was in Yerushalayim based on the tshuva, that got a brit mila, and then he fell ill, and he couldn't go to the mikveh yet. So he had mila without tvila. Then they came to Shabbat. So now, can he keep Shabbat or not? Okay, that's a technicality. Can he keep Shabbat or not keep Shabbat? But the question was, they needed to be mechalal Shabbat because he was sick. Were they allowed to be mechalal Shabbat for him because of his illness now? You're allowed to be mechalal Shabbat for a shomer Shabbat, someone who keeps Shabbat. You're not allowed to be mechalal Shabbat for someone who is not shomer Shabbat. The reason that we do it today for people that are not shomer Shabbat is because of Mishum Eva. It's a din in Eva. Now, generally, the principle is that the reason that we accept in the end that you're allowed to violate Shabbat for life-threatening issues is because it says v'chai b'hem, v'lo shiyamot b'hem, that you have to live by the mitzvot and not die by the mitzvot, except for the three cardinal sins, and therefore we have to live. That's Shmuel's reasoning, and that's the one that's accepted. There is another reason that's brought over there, that is brought l'alocha many times, which is, chalel alav Shabbat achat, b'mechalel one Shabbat, k'dei shishmru Shabbatot arbei, in order to keep many Shabbatot. For that reason, when you have a din of a person who is Shomer Shabbat, you're Mechalo Shabbat for them in order that they can keep many Shabbatot. But if they're not a Shomer Shabbat, you wouldn't necessarily do that because just because you're Mechalo Shabbat for them now doesn't mean that you're going to be a Shomer Shabbat later on. So that was the question that was posed over here, which is this guy has Mila without Tvila. Now he needs intercession on Shabbat. And can you violate? Can we Mechalo Shabbat for this individual? So the Radbaz was Mechadesh over here. He says that there's an in-between stage. A person has Mila without Tvila, leaves the world of Akum, but does not enter the world of a Jew. So he's left the world of Akum, so therefore he's no longer under the restriction of Akum Sheshabbat Chayav Mita. So he can keep Shabbat, even though he's not Jewish. But he's not yet Jewish because he doesn't have Tvila. But because he can be Shomer Shabbat, and we can say about this individual, if we're Mechalo Alav Shabbat Achat, he will keep Shabbatot Arbe. Therefore, we can be Mechalo Shabbat for this individual. It's Psak of the Red Bats. Unbelievable Psak. So based on that, many discuss after this, what is that status of Mila without Tvila? I think I recall from Rav Soloveitchik, I don't know if it's from the Brisker Mesorah, or if this is Rav Soloveitchik himself, says that with regards to this Mila without Tvila, that there are actually two stages in a person's conversion that simulate what every Jew has. That is, that we have a covenant, me Avram Avinu, that's the Brit that exists with every individual. That Brit, or that covenant with every individual, is something that when we say, once a Jew, always a Jew, that you cannot get out of being a Jew. Once you're a Jew, you can't forsake your ability to be a Jew. Your status as a Jew is permanent. That comes from Brit Milah, that's the covenant with Avram Avinu. And so, therefore, when a person gets the Milah in the conversion process, he's entering to that Brit with Avram Avinu. There's a second covenant, which either it's at Arvot Moav or Har Sinai, which is Kabbalat Olam Mitzvot, the acceptance of the Olam Mitzvot. That is something that a Jew can shirk or change. Meaning that we say when a Jew doesn't keep the Mitzvot, then he has a din like a Nochri in terms of Yai Nesech. When a Jew's not Shomer Shabbat, he has a din like a Nochri. What do you mean he has a din like a Nochri? Because he's given up a certain aspect of his Jewishness, which is the Kabbalat Olam Mitzvot. Now again, he's always a Jew, but that's for a base level that he's always Jewish. In terms of his brit, the covenant with Avraham Avinu, serves a kabbalat ol mitzvot to have a status of a goy for nemanut, to have a status of a goy for yai nesech, if he doesn't keep the ol mitzvot. So there, shemao velo taval will be in that state. He'll have the milo, which will bring him into the covenant of Avraham Avinu. But in terms of tvilo, he's missing the kabbalat ol mitzvot. So he's reached that level of the covenant, but he hasn't reached the level of a full Jew of the conversion through it's Vila Tager Ev Mamad Har Sinai. And so that's the explanation of this. It has a nafkamino aloha, even though we believe that Ger Shalomal B'Taval is a requirement, a definitive requirement. Nevertheless, there might be nafkamino when he's Mal V'Lo Taval, even though that doesn't complete the conversion process, that there is some sort of interim stage. So some suggest, mentioned by the Tesh Beit, and the Magen of Avraham Paskins this way, aloha, based on this, same as this story here, that when you convert a Ger, you should not do the milah on a Thursday, because then the shlishi of the milah, the third day milah, will be on Shabbat. And there's a question whether we can be mechalal Shabbat for this gear. That's the whole question here. Can you be mechalal Shabbat? So better not to do the milah on Thursday, to put yourself in a position where you might have to be mechalal Shabbat on the shlishi of the milah. So therefore avoid, some suggest avoiding doing the milah on that day, because they didn't have this answer that we discussed over here, the possibility that you could be mechalal Shabbat based on that ingenuity of the tshuva. Right now, the Gemara says, Amar Rabba, Uvda hava be Rabbi Chia Barabi, Virav Yosef, Matne Rabbi Oshaya Barabi, Rabbi Safra Matne Rabbi Oshaya Barabi Chia. So here you have an instance where there was an incident. Rabba says it happened in the house of Rabbi Chia Barabi. Rabbi Yosef says it happened by Rabbi Oshaya Baribi, not Barabi, but Baribi, who were two great Tanaim. And it happened in one of these two individuals' houses. That was Rabbi Shaya, the son of Rabbi Chia. That's the Kamei Ger Shemal Velo Taval. The Ger came for him, he had Milo without Vilo. Amru Shayikan Adamachar, Venebli Nach. Stay here till tomorrow, and we'll put you into the mikveh. Shmamina Talat. From this, you have three conclusions from this story. Number one, Shmamina Ger Tzarech Shlosha. A Ger requires three. Where did you see three over here? So the way Rashi explains this Gemara is that when they said the individuals over here, they were telling you the incremental individuals. They were not telling you each one. When we had the first statement, Rabbi says, Uvdava Bei Rabbi Chir Barabi. That's where it was. Rabbi Yosef says it was Rabbi Yoshiya Baribi. Not that it was in his house, but he was also present. And then Rav Safu says it was Rabbi Oshaya Rabbi Chia. He's adding on a third individual. How do you know that? So the Ramban over here says because of Rav Safra's addition. Rav Safra added on Rabbi Oshaya bar Rabbi Chia was not a significant individual. When you're talking about Rabbi Chia bar Rabbi, or you're talking about Rabbi Oshaya bar Ribi, those were big Tanaim. To say they were present is a big deal. To say that Rabbi Oshaya bar Rabbi Chia was there, it's not Malev and Omuri. It doesn't make any difference. It must be that Rav Safra was saying that this individual was also there. And he was also there because they needed Shlosha. And that's what Rav Safra was adding. Rav Safra's not adding somebody who's on a high level. He's adding someone, but to make him a third one. And that's how the Gemara concludes over here. Ger tzarich Shlosha. Ushmanena ger enu ger ad shimo bo. Second of all, you're not a ger until you have Mila and Tvila. That's why they needed to bring him Tvila. Ushmanena, but bilin ger balaylo. A ger can't go to the mikveh at night. The ger has to go to mikveh during the day. V'neima shmanena nami bina mumchim. Says, wait a minute, maybe you should ask here that you need not just three dayanim, but you need mumchim over here. You need full-fledged mumchim. So Gemara says, Doma iklau, says maybe that was just happenstance. It wasn't that they needed mumchim, just these happened to be the three individuals that were over here. It's not because they required mumchim. This is just the story, the nature of the story. We can't prove it from there. It might have just been. That's who was there. But now we can't prove from that you need three. This goes back to the story on the first Amud, which we have to ask the question, with Minyamin Abdei Rav Ashi. Over there, he sent two of his Talmidim to convert him and to make to an Eved Kenani. Where was the third party? So some say from here that you only need two Edim, you don't need a Beit Din. Others suggest, no, that the third person just wasn't significant. Two of them were his Talmidim. They just grabbed the third guy to be the Beit Din, but you do require a Beit Din. But that question comes up over there because there they only sent two. Over here you have three for conversion. The question is by an Eved Kenani, do you need three? Or is two sufficient based on that story by Minyamin, the Eved of Rav Ashi? So now the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Avam Rabbi Yochanan Ger Tzarif Gimel. You need three. We saw this from the story, you need three, but why? Because Mishpat Ktibbe. Because Mishpat is written by the Ger. Now, where is Mishpat written by it? Rashi brings one pasuk, Tosfot actually brings two psukim. One is, Ushvatetem Tzedek ben Ishu ben Achivu ben Gero. So you see there, the word Ger and Shafat are together. Or, Mishpat Achad Yelachem Vilager. So again, Mishpat together with the Ger. So therefore, the word Ger and Mishpat appear together, that requires or demands that there are three people there. Tanu Rabbanan, Misha Baba Amar Gerani, I am a convert, Yochol Nekablenu. You would think that we'd accept him. Tomal Omar Itcha. He has to be with you. Bimukzak Decha. We have to have proof or evidence of the fact that he is a Ger. Ba Veidavimo. He comes with his witnesses. How do we know that that works? Minayin. Tomal Omar, because the Pasuk says, lo tonu oto. So now it says, Ein li ela ba'aretz. I only have that in Eretz Yisrael, b'chutz la'aretz minayin. How do you know it applies in chutz la'aretz? Tamal omar itcha. B'chol makom shi'itcha. Anywhere he's with you. Inkein tamalama tamal omar ba'aretz. Then why do we mention the word aretz? Why are you mentioning there? Ba'aretz tzarich la'vi raya. In Eretz Yisrael, he has to bring proof that he's a ger. B'chutz la'aretz, ein tzarich la'vi raya. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says the difference is in Eretz Yisrael you have to prove you're a ger. Outside of Eretz Yisrael you don't have to prove you're a ger. Chamim Armim, ben baretz, ben bechutz laretz, tzarich lavi raya. That whether it's inside of Eretz Yisrael or outside of Eretz Yisrael, you have to bring a proof. So now, bahu veidavimo, krol omeli. He comes with his witnesses. What do you need a posuk to tell me that he can convert? So Amar of Sheshes, damrei shamanu shnit gayer bebeitin shoponi. So we heard that he converted in this beitin. I would think that we don't believe him. Kamash Balan, that we believe them when they testify that, not that testifying directly that we saw his conversion, but we heard his conversion at Beit Din. That's enough evidence to say that he is converted. All right. So now we'll stop over here. There are a couple of things to clarify over here in terms of the necessity for three over here. First of all, if we learn out the necessity for three over here from the word Mishpat, the Gemara in the beginning of Sanhedrin discusses whether by Dinei Mamononot, there's a requirement for three. There are two opinions there. One opinion there is that you require three and three mumchim for Dinei Mamononot. That means that over here you would require three and three mumchim. How come the Gemara doesn't say that? Gemara just says you require three and not mumchim. There's another day over there that min adin, you only require one to be a Beit Din, but Chachamim instituted that you have three. So according to that day, that's not a big deal because they instituted three, they said you don't need three mumchim. So over here, by Ger, they require three, like Dinei Mamonah, but not Mumchim. But according to the Deya that says that Min HaTorah, you require three Mumchim. And the only reason that we did not require Mumchim in the Gemara in Sanhedrin is Shalot Tino Delet Bifnei Lavin. It's not to dry up the liquidity in the lending market, because people will be unwilling to lend when they know they can't get a Beit Din to get the money back. In the end, it'll be too hard to get the money back. They won't lend the money. So there, it's a Gzeira, Shalot Tino Delet Bifnei Lavin. What are you going to say over here? Why shouldn't you require mumchim over here? Okay, tinol dela b'fnei gerim. That's not a big deal. So Tosafot over here gives two answers. He says, v'im tomar v'anan eichim mekabim gerim habiyin mumchim yesh lamar. Either d'shluchutayu avdinan. We, the Gemara talks about in Sanhedrin as well, that the idea that we do the bidding of the courts that were before us. Those that were smuchim and mumchim granted us the rights to do this on their behalf. And therefore, when we do it even though we're not mumchim, we're allowed to do it. That we have with regards to other issues like knasot and so other and so forth, that we're not really allowed to be done, but shlichutayu kavit. That's one possibility. And then, he brings the second answer, which is amazing. It says, just like they worried about closing up liquidity in the loan market, comes up with this concept that you're not allowed to close the door before a ger, even though we know that we're supposed to dissuade the ger from converting. Why not be tanol delet? Tosla just makes a statement, lo tanol delet b'fnei gerim, which is an amazing statement because we don't really have such a concept. Number two is, why is Eretz Yisrael different? Why is Eretz Yisrael different? So Rashi says, mishum shvachot Eretz Yisrael, the kamer hachim b'mishakir. Because Eretz Yisrael, the greatness of Eretz Yisrael, people will lie to join the Jewish nation. In Chutz Laaretz, nobody's going to lie to become a Jew because it's not a great thing. In Eretz Yisrael, people will lie to become Jews. And sure enough, Hayom Hazeh, that's exactly what happens. In Chutz Laaretz, people don't lie to become Jews. To come to Eretz Yisrael, people lie to be Jews because then they can get out of where they are and come here to be Jews. And that's what's happening. People will lie to be Jews in order that they can come here to Eretz Yisrael. Gemara says that would have been the difference. And Eretz Yisrael is different than Chutz Laaretz because people are willing to lie in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, you have to check them out in Eretz Yisrael because there he's more likely to lie. Right? The last thing you have to do with Tosfot says, memuchzak lecha. What does it mean that if he is muchzak lecha, that we, itcha b'muchzak lecha, where's that requirement? So Tosfot says, Omer Rabbeinu Tam, the dafka bid yadina to have a ovid kochavim ikara. It's only if we know that he was a non-Jew originally, do then we say that he has to be muchzak and he has to bring evidence to the fact. But if we didn't know he was a non-Jew, then we have a concept called a pesh asar and pesh hitir. If he comes before us and tells us, listen, I'm a non-Jew and I converted. Well, the only reason we know he's a non-Jew is because he told us he's a non-Jew. So just like we believe him to tell us he's a non-Jew, we're going to believe him that he told us that he converted. But if we have outside evidence that he's a non-Jew, that with Edim, or whatever reason we know that he's a non-Jew, then he'll have to bring evidence outside of his own statement that he is Jewish. It's a concept that we'll get to in the Gemara and Gittin with regards to women who are taken in Shvuyot as captives. We have this concept called Pesha Asar, Pesha Yitir. If they give us information, then they can also undermine that information because the only reason we know something is because of them, so they can tell us the whole story. Since they're believed about the beginning piece, they're believed about the end piece. But if we have outside evidence to what happened to them, then they can't come be matir, and we need some other edim to testify on their behalf. And that's the same thing over here. Itcha b'mukzak lecha means that you need evidence of the fact that he converted because we knew he was an ovid kochavim. But if we don't know he's an ovid kochavim, and therefore the only reason we know he's an ovid kochavim is because he tells us, then when he says I converted, we have to believe him because the only reason we knew there was a problem was because of him, and he cured that problem by telling us that he converted, and therefore we will believe him. Okay, we're going to stop over here. 8 lines down on the top of Mem Zayin Amud Aleph.